to this week's colloquium. Today we're pleased to have Krzysztof Meissner. He got his PhD from the University of Waterloo and University of Warsaw, different W, and has been there, I guess, ever since. Now he's a professor. In 2013, he won an award which Google translates to the Officer's Cross Rebirth of Polish Award for his contributions to high-energy physics. So today he's going to tell us about the conformal standard model.
Thank you very much. I'm honored to be here. I would like to talk today about some proposal that we have made with Hermann Nicolai from Max Planck Institute in Potsdam, in Germany, seven years ago. And a couple of days ago, we have released a paper to the archives that, in a sense, summarizes the state of affairs with this model. In fact, this model now has very, very concrete predictions for the LHC. So it is fully falsifiable. So there is only, in fact, there is one parameter in the model that once it is known, all the model is, all the decay rates, all the cross sections, everything can be calculated in the model. So it is very simple. The assumptions that we are making are the following. The standard model is enlarged as little as possible. That's the first assumption. The second is that we have seesaw mechanism for neutrinos. We know that neutrinos are massive. There are oscillations of neutrinos. So we assume that there are right chiral neutrinos in the model. They should be there. The other is that we spontaneously break local SU2 cross U1. That's the usual story. And that we spontaneously break global lepton symmetry. So we don't break lepton symmetry explicitly. That's important for many reasons. I will discuss some of them in this lecture. And that the model has no intermediate scales. So that the model is viable up to Planck scale. So we run all the parameters of the model from the weak scale to the Planck scale, actually the other way around, and nothing should happen in between. So the model is, as it is at the weak scale, is almost the same with some logarithmic corrections at the Planck scale. Those are the assumptions. The other assumption is that since there is nothing in between, we have to solve all non-gravitational, quote unquote, problems of the standard that we have in particle physics. That is hierarchy problem that I will discuss in detail in a minute, strong CP problem, cold dark matter candidate we should have in the model. We don't solve the problems that we consider gravitational, quote unquote, namely, for example, the cosmological constant problem or inflation. So we don't have it in the model. So we solve only particle physics problems. But we have to solve those if we claim that this model should be viable up to the Planck scale. Then, with these assumptions, we have a model that necessarily has a new complex scalar. We don't call it Higgs because it does not come from the Braut-Englert Higgs mechanism. So it is a scalar, necessarily complex. Then the real part of the scalar, generically, mixes with the usual Higgs. So we have two mass eigenstates and not one, as in the standard model. And its phase, because it's spontaneously broken lepton symmetry, is a Goldstone boson, actually a pseudo-Goldstone boson, that solves the strong CP problem, and it is our cold dark matter candidate. And there exists a range of parameters in the model, narrow but not extremely narrow, that satisfies all the assumptions. And these assumptions are not satisfied in the pure standard model, as we will see. The hierarchy problem. If you look at the standard model, it is conformally invariant, except for one term, the three-level Higgs mass term. That's the term that causes all the problems that we usually call the hierarchy problem. Now, the quantum corrections for scalar masses, for any dimension full parameter in the model. Yes? I haven't seen it, sorry. I exclude gravity. No, there is no gravity in the model at all, at all. Quantum corrections for scalar masses are usually m squared is grows like lambda squared. The question is why m is much less than lambda. With ultraviolet cutoff, the lambda, the scale of new physics, in our case, we take lambda, this cutoff, of the order of Planck mass. Sorry? Because we don't want to have anything in between, because in between we would break conformal symmetry. Sorry, but gravity at the Planck scale starts to be strong, so we cannot neglect it anymore. Up to the Planck scale, it is a weak interaction. So I will discuss this in a minute. The most popular proposal to solve this hierarchy problem is going to supersymmetry. For many decades, it was MSSM. Now we have, since MSSM is essentially ruled out by LHC, there is phenomenological or constraint or next or natural. There are many adjectives, but they usually are supersymmetric with the supersymmetry breaking scale of the order of 1 TeV. As we know, this scale is pushed up by LHC. We propose a different solution to the hierarchy problem. Namely, that's a paper a couple of days ago that was released. We treat the cutoff scale, this MP, as a real physical scale. Since we know that then, certainly, the particle physics, the standard model, enlarged standard model, is not enough. We certainly have to include gravitational degrees of freedom from then on. The unknown degrees of freedom above this cutoff scale are, we assume, are integrated over, whatever that means. We don't know what we should do above the Planck scale. In the usual quantum field theory would integrate over these degrees of freedom. Maybe that's the solution as well there. We don't know. But they are above the Planck scale, and the effective theory that is left over from this integration is defined at lambda. And we assume that for all scales lower than lambda, we have only known degrees of freedom, so that the gravity is coupled weakly. We don't include in the running gravitational degrees of freedom, so we have known degrees of freedom below lambda. But we don't send lambda to infinity, so it is different from the usual renormalization scheme where we send the cutoff to infinity, we send bare masses to infinity, we send lambda bare to infinity, and we are left, so there is no dependence on lambda anymore, so everything depends on the renormalization point. That's not the procedure here. We treat lambda as a real physical scale. So the theory is defined at lambda. Bare quantities are renormalized quantities at lambda. For dimensionless parameters, we know that is the expansion, the usual expansion, and there is no problem there is no hierarchy problem for dimensionless couplings, because everything runs logarithmically. If mu is equal to lambda, lambda b is equal to lambda renormalized. But for dimension full parameters, and we have those in the model, on top of mr squared and the usual expansion, there is a possibility that there is a coefficient in front of lambda squared. And this coefficient, we assume that the theory that has that is almost conformal, this coefficient has to be equal to zero at the Planck scale, at the lambda scale, let's say. It is important that this thing, when we calculate this, depends in fact, also in principle, it could depend on mu, lambda, r, and capital lambda separately. In fact, we can show that this is a function only through lambda b. So this is the function of parameter of bare parameter lambda at the Planck scale. So if this is satisfied, the theory does not have quadratic divergences. That's the one zero that we impose. Okay, so this spontaneous, softly broken conformal symmetry, what is this? There are three fundamental requirements for a theory to belong to this class. First of all these functions at the Planck's, at the lambda, at Planck scale, let's say Planck scale, they are equal to zero. So that's an additional constraint on parameters. All masses, MB and MR, is less than lambda. Those two things are usually described as hierarchy problem, but they are disconnected. One of them is the absence of quadratic divergences. That's one problem. And the other is sometimes called naturalness problem, that the parameters that are left in the model are much less than lambda. Supersymmetry solves this problem automatically by construction, but does not solve this problem. That has to be assumed separately. And there are no Landau poles or instabilities in the whole region between electroweak and Planck scale. Those are three requirements that we impose on a theory to belong to this class. We will see that the standard model does not belong to this class because it doesn't satisfy two of those conditions. In this conformal standard model that I will describe in a minute, what is it? What is the field content? All conditions are non-trivial. All have to be satisfied. And that gives constraints on the parameters at Planck mass. In supersymmetry, by construction, by the fact that we have only softly broken supersymmetry, usually we assume such a fact, this thing is zero not only at the Planck scale, it is zero identically for all scales. So, and that is not needed to solve the hierarchy problem, to have F identically zero. It is enough if it is zero at the scale, at the cutoff scale. But by construction, supersymmetry, so we assume that this is here, we don't have supersymmetry, and this is satisfied at one point, at lambda. But the next condition, that all masses are much less than lambda, they have to be imposed separately in supersymmetry, or renormalized. That's the fact that the softly breaking parameters like mu or a are of the order of the weak scale, and not of the order of the Planck scale. That's an assumption in supersymmetry. In theory without scalars, like QED or QCD, there are no quadratic divergences at all. So there is no point in asking what are quadratic divergences. But there is a question about the Landau poles, because even in those theories, there can be Landau poles. We know then QED, it is at ridiculously large value, the Landau pole. But still, we have to impose the condition that all the couplings do not have Landau poles within the range of validity. So that is the condition. So what is conformal standard model? We assume that we have the standard model, the usual thing, with left chiral neutrinos, with left chiral lepton doublets, lepton quarks, left quarks, right quarks, and so on. On top of it, we add right chiral neutrinos, because we know that neutrinos are massive. So on top of left chiral, that were usually in the standard models, we must have right chiral. So having right chiral, we can write two terms. One of them coupling two leptons, two left chiral doublets. And the other, we can write Majorana-like mass. That's the usual term. But the question is, what should we do here? Since we want to have lepton number symmetry conserved at the level of the Lagrangian, we know that looking at this, the nu has to carry a lepton number, because otherwise this would not be lepton number conserving. Therefore, nu right is the same lepton as nu, as for example, electron. Therefore, this carries two charges of the lepton number. Therefore, phi has to be complex and has to carry minus two charges of the lepton number. Therefore, phi has to be complex if we don't want to break lepton number symmetry explicitly. So we have an additional complex scalar. And in fact, this makes the whole theory classically conformally, this piece classically conformally invariant of order 4. Therefore, having two fields, two scalar fields, one doublet, the usual Higgs doublet, and the complex phi, we can write three terms in here that are renormalizable. And on top of it, we can write two terms assuming that M1 and M2 are small. That's the assumption usually made also in supersymmetry. We're making this here. So the question is whether such a model can be extended up to the Planck scale so that no parameters are large when we go through these 17 orders of magnitude. If they stay small, we say this theory belongs to this softly broken conformal symmetry class. So that's the model. And we ask about what are the parameters that can be extended through 17 orders of magnitude. So that's a very simple model, that the whole model is here. So we have to have the seesaw mechanism for neutrinos. From this, if we assume that there are no some tremendous cancellations, the vacuum expectation value of H should be of the same order as vacuum expectation value of phi. They should be of the same order. That means that here we have something of the order of 100 GeV. Therefore, to have the seesaw mechanism, we assume that this is of order 1, but these Y nu, this Dirac Yukawa couplings, should be of order 10 to the minus 6, because the neutrino masses are this squared divided by this. So we need something of the order of 10 to the minus 12 to have neutrino masses below 1 electron volt. One may say whether it is natural. Maybe it isn't, but the electron Yukawa coupling is of this order. So we have already Yukawa coupling of this order in the standard model. So we assume that this Y nu is of the order of electron Yukawa coupling. This phi is absolutely necessary because of the lepton number. So it has to be there, and it has to be complex. So this is the whole model that we have. We assume that these parameters, M1, M2, and the vacuum expectation values, are of the order of the weak scale. So there are no other scales except the weak scale and the cutoff lambda. So that's the whole model. We have to ask whether it is possible to, so that the model is viable up to the Planck scale, and whether, for example, the Higgs particle is there, whether it is possible to have a Higgs particle. We see that these two particles generically mix. So there will be two eigenstates. One of those should be the usual Higgs, the Higgs that was observed at CERN, and the other should be a new mass eigenstate. So we want to, yeah. These ones, yes. We assume they are of order 1. Because we have checked what are the coupling constants of the phase, because the phase is the Goldstone boson of the broken symmetry. So it couples only via derivatives. So it should be a massless particle. But we know that since this, we have shown, I will talk about this later, that this phase behaves like an axion. It is extremely weakly coupled to any standard model particles because neutrinos are light. We don't know why they are light, but the fact that they are light makes this coupling extremely small. I will discuss this. That's a fortunate thing that happened in the model. OK, so the particle content are standard model with usual very light neutrinos. There are heavy neutrinos. Of course, neutrinos are also mixtures of left and right, as always. But we assume that one of the mixtures is light, very light, below 1 electron volt, and the other is heavy. I will show the graphs later on, what we predict for heavy neutrinos, and a complex new scalar. We assume that, yes? Yeah. Sorry? We are working on that. That should be through leptogenesis. Extremely weakly coupled. That doesn't... even then, you know, the axion has couplings of the order of 10 to the minus to gluons, for example, or to photons, 10 to the minus 15 inverse GeV. It's extremely small coupling. I will discuss an axion later on. I have calculated this. So that's, for example, it's not, there's no threat for nucleosynthesis, for example, that something decays after. No, it is created then, because there are CP violating phases here. Here. For example, axions are never in thermal equilibrium. They are never in the production of axions proceeds through coherent oscillations in the potential. I don't want to comment on. We are working now on leptogenesis in this model, so I don't want to comment now. Okay. Okay. So there is Braut-Englert-Higgs mechanism for electroweak symmetry, so that the vacuum expectation value of the Higgs is not equal to zero, and spontaneous symmetry breaking of the lepton number through the expectation value of the phi field. So there is a Goldstone boson, actually pseudo-Goldstone boson, of this global lepton number symmetry, because phi is charged under lepton number symmetry. And we have shown in one of the papers that it couples like an axion, that actually this alpha couples like an axion to gluons with naturally extremely weak couplings. I will discuss this later on, because usually one assumes that an axion couples very weakly because there are right chiral neutrinos, there are right chiral quarks, sorry, and there's anomaly there. It's a completely different mechanism. In our case, this field, which is necessary in the model, couples like an axion, so solves strong CP problem. I will discuss this later on. So what are the quadratic divergences? Here, we shouldn't use the dimensional regularization that hides the quadratic divergences, because they are zero by almost by definition in dimensional regularization, because you look only for divergences when d is going to 4. While for quadratic, you should look at some when d is equals to 2. But then you don't know how to treat the vector bosons, whether they have 1 degree of freedom or 3 degrees of freedom. So we have used different regularization that shows this explicitly. And those are two, since we have two mass eigenstates, two scalar mass eigenstates, we have two conditions. Of course, in the standard model, this would be absent, because that's connected with the lambda 2, lambda 3 that are not there, and coupling of the neutrinos, while this would be there. This is lambda 1. This is the usual self-coupling of the Higgs. Lambda 3 is self-coupling of the scalar, so it would not be there for the standard model. This is the weak coupling, this is the Yukawa of the top, and this is the hypercharged coupling. So that's the equation, and we assume that this is equal to zero at lambda. Yes? Lambda 1 is the Higgs self-coupling, lambda 3 is lambda 3 or lambda 2, here we have it. Lambda 2 is for the mixing, and lambda 3 is for the phi. Because there are two eigenstates of masses. We have chosen that, of course, it depends. Not at this level, no. At this level, no. Quadratic divergences are independent. No, they are the highest divergences, so they are independent. But one has to use some regularization that shows quadratic divergences. Otherwise, you would not have the... So in a sense, dimensional regularization From this point of view, it's misleading because, of course, it's extremely convenient because it obeys gauge invariance automatically, but does and has zero quadratic divergences. But who? Sorry. Yes. I'm assuming, yeah, I'm avoiding the issue. Maybe it isn't, but you know, we assume that the theory at the Planck scale has such a feature, that this is zero. That's our assumption. As well as in supersymmetry, you assume that the mu is very small. That's a different issue, but you know, you assume it in the same way. That's an assumption that we solve it. We don't solve it. I agree. In the supersymmetry, you have this F are zero for all scales. That is the solution in supersymmetry. That it is just zero, whatever scale. So this, all these things, you can substitute the values at any scale, of course, with addition of the superpartner's contribution, and it is just zero. That's the solution of the in the supersymmetry. We say that it is not necessary to have it exactly identically zero at all scale. It is enough if the theory defined at some scale has this function equal to zero. That's what we say. And we assume that this is the case. Of course, yes. So the actual way, since we don't know this lambda 3 and lambda 2 and yn, the actual way to proceed would be, if there is such a heavy scalar, we find lambda 1, lambda 2, lambda 3, yn, we run them to some scale and check whether this is equal to 0 at some scale. That would be the appropriate way of proceeding. If we know all the couplings, we check whether this is actually zero at some scale. Then we say this theory belongs to the SBCS class, to the softly broken conformal symmetry class, and the actual lambda that defines a theory is given by the point where this running, of course, is equal to zero. That would be the way to proceed. Since we don't have lambda 2 and lambda 3, we want to predict what LHC would see, we assume that it is something close to the Planck scale. So in that way, we get lambda 2 and lambda 3 and yn as an additional constraint. No, there are normalized couplings we know at the weak scale, and the running we know. So, no. Okay, but let's go on. So in the standard model, there is only this. Of course, there is no lambda 3. And it was shown a couple of months ago in a paper by Japanese authors that this is not zero, this thing is not zero without a lambda 3, of course, at lambda close to the Planck mass. It is zero at 10 to the 24, I think, GeV. They have shown that this function, when they run, because of course for the standard model, everything is known. The running is known, everything is known. So we can run this, and it is of course non-zero at the weak scale. That was the assumption of Veltman at some point, that we assume that this should be zero at the weak scale. At the weak scale, and then he said, what is the YT? So he predicted the mass of the top quark by that, but of course, it was wrong because this thing at the weak scale this is not a cutoff in our sense, in a sense, with hindsight, we would say that this was wrong to assume that this is zero at the weak scale, because that's not the cutoff for the theory. So, of course, he predicted the wrong value of the top quark. Okay, so this is not zero. Moreover, it's not only this. One can say, okay, maybe the scale is 10 to the 24. We don't know. Maybe that's the proper scale of the theory. But on top of it, lambda 1 starts to be negative with running about 10 to the 10 GeV. So with the known value of the, it depends very much on the value of the top quark, but the value of the mass of the top quark is known very precisely now. So it starts to be negative, so there is the whole theory starts to be unstable above 10 to the 10. So standard model certainly does not belong to the SBCS. While the running of lambda 1, if we have additional couplings, like lambda 3 and lambda 2, changes. So it starts from being slightly below 0, it pushes it up to above 0. So lambda 1 is not is not below 0 in this model for the whole period, 100 GeV, 10 to the 18 GeV. But it requires a very small change, in a sense, because these values are not zero. They are certainly not zero, but they are very close to zero. F1 is very close to zero in the standard model, but certainly it is not zero. And this lambda 1 is not negative here. It is positive over the whole thing. Actually, I will show you the running in a minute. At the minimum, the mass eigenstates consist of the mixed Higgs and the new scalar. So in general, there is some mixing angle, cosine beta, sine beta, and there are differences with the vacuum expectation value. And these mass eigenstates we call H0 and phi0, with masses MH and M phi. There is also a phase, which does not enter here, the axion that I will discuss later on. We impose the condition that mass of H0 is 125 GeV, that the vacuum expectation value is 246 to recover masses of W and masses of Z, of course. And all couplings in this model remain small and positive in the whole region. The running coupling constant. Those are the couplings at known couplings. For example, lambda 1, which is this, is a known coupling at the weak scale. This is yn squared. No, we don't know what it is, but they have to be chosen such that they run through 17 orders of magnitude without being negative or having the Landau poles. So there's a very narrow window of the possible values that have such a behavior, that they are small and positive over the whole range of energies. Yes? Sorry? Yn is the value of the masses of right chiral neutrinos, roughly. You have a couple of things, yeah. Mm-hmm. This new right transpose new right, roughly. So we have scanned over possible values of the constants that satisfy these conditions. A narrow set of values turned out to satisfy it. We have imposed on top of it that the tangent beta is less than 0.3. Why? Because we know, of course, we don't know exactly the decay rate or the width of the Higgs that was observed, but this decay rate or the width is multiplied by cosine squared of beta in this model, because this mass eigenstates has cosine beta of the usual doublet and sine of beta of this new scalar. Therefore, since it is not known, but we certainly know that the sine of beta or cosine of beta is not less than 0.2, because the decay rates of the Higgs are very vaguely known, but they are between 0.7, 0.6, depending on the channel, till 1.1. There is a discrepancy between ATLAS and CMS. So, but we have assumed to be on the safe side that the mixing angle is less than 0.3, so that cosine squared of beta is bigger than 0.9, so we are within the experimental limits now of LHC. If we take into account all the constraints, including the ones at the Planck scale, we have two parameter space. Actually, if we are interested in the scalar sector, it is approximately even one parameter that you will see in a minute. The width of the new scalar, since the new scalar is heavier in this model, it turns out to be heavier, then the width of the new scalar is, first of all, the standard model width of the same mass times sine squared of beta, because sine of beta is the content of the usual Higgs in this eigenstate. Then phi zero can decay into two or three usual Higgses, because if you diagonalize the quadratic term, the third order term doesn't have to follow. It can be rotated with respect to it. It can decay into two axions, or it can decay, you will see that it is not, if the right chiral neutrinos are degenerate, this thing is not possible. But if they are not degenerate, it may happen that the lightest right chiral neutrino is, so that twice the mass of the lightest is below phi zero, and then it can decay into right chiral neutrinos as well. So that's the width. No. The coupling is extremely small. This coupling is extremely small. That would be through the in the potential, this phase is not there, so there is no coupling, direct coupling. It's a direct coupling between the moduli of the potential, so it's not there. So predicted scalar and heavy neutrino masses. It turned out that the positive tangent beta is excluded here. So there is negative tangent beta. We see those are, so for example, this is 0.3. We see that if we know that it's minus 0.3 tangent beta, the mass of the phi is almost uniquely determined. It's almost horizontal. So this is almost, if we know tangent beta, we can say that the mass of the phi, of the heavier eigenstate, is almost uniquely defined. Even not knowing, those are not MN, those are the average of right chiral neutrinos. So we don't distinguish. They are not in the scalar. So we see that here, for example, this is 400 GeV is here. And never this thing can decay into 2 MN. So, but that's, once this scalar is discovered, we can immediately say, almost uniquely, what is the tangent beta, and calculate all the decay rates, all the cross sections, everything, if we have both the beta and the M plus. And that is almost unique. The axion, now the phase of the new scalar, yes? Sorry? How LHC can discover a scalar? Yeah, because it has a content of the usual Higgs, so it is produced with cross section sine squared of beta. So it's absolutely produced. I don't know. So if we have, for example, this, that's 0.1, sine squared of beta is 0.01. That means that you take you take the mass 1 TeV. You take 1 TeV, for 1 TeV, the width of the Higgs is rough, the usual Higgs is roughly 1 TeV, more or less. But you multiply it by 0.01 here. So, you know, I know the cross section for the usual Higgs. And here it is just sine of beta of the usual. I'm not talking about the cross section of PP into X and Higgs. I'm talking about the width of the Higgs. Width of the Higgs is roughly 1 TeV if Higgs has 1 TeV, the usual Higgs. A production rate goes rapidly down So if the mass of this heavier scalar turns out to be too high, the probability of detection is very small. Not only because the cross-section for production goes down rapidly, but sine beta goes down. So there are two factors that make the discovery very, very difficult. We are now working on it. Yes, yes, yes. I was talking about the width. If it is produced, what is the width? But of course, the production rate goes rapidly down with energy, yes. With mass of the Higgs, yes. So above some scale, that is probably impossible even in the new run of LHC to discover, because it will be very narrow and very rarely produced. So for both these factors, it's very difficult, because also the resolution in energy goes down with energy, with square root, with energy, with mass of the Higgs. So it goes down with the signal to background ratio goes down as well. So what about an axion? It just so happens that I'm also the deputy spokesman of the CERN experiment looking for axions independently by the laser experiment. So that's my favorite subject. So axion is phase of the new scalar phi. So this is, in principle, Goldstone boson of spontaneously broken lepton number symmetry. So we can calculate in this model the axion photon coupling. It is calculable, but it is very small. I will show you in a minute why it is very small. And it turns out, because normally people assume introducing axions, both in the original Pechet-Quinn and later by Wilczek, for example, that there exists a right chiral quarks, very massive, so that we have an anomaly, and axion couples through this anomaly to gluons. That's the usual approach. In our model, we have axions as phases, so we can calculate its properties. It is not through anomaly. We don't have any anomaly here. We have just the statement. You will see the diagram in a minute. But the axion couples, for example, to photons, because in laboratory experiments, we always look for axions through axion photon-photon coupling. It is always like that. So that one of the photons is replaced by the strong magnetic field, so we have a direct conversion axion photon. And since it couples like E times B, for example, in laser experiments, I will describe it in a minute, one of the polarization of the light couples to axions, the one with which A is parallel to B, and the other polarization doesn't. So one throws the laser light at the angle of 45 degrees, for example, so that one polarization couples to axions, the other doesn't. Since axions are massive, the one of the polarization lags behind the other. So from a purely linear polarization, we have ellipticity. That is extremely small. Actually, this level that is calculated in our model is far below any possibility to detect in any experiment now planned, because the record in several years would be roughly 10 to the minus 11 inverse GeV. So it is four orders of magnitude below anything that can be detected. So the idea is the following, that if in the presence of magnetic field, this is a constant factor, so we have a direct conversion AE. So we have different eigenstates. So the photon has a different eigenstates. It mixes with the axion. Present experiments are below 10 to the minus 10 GeV. Actually, 10 to the minus 9 is the better thing. The other thing that is much more spectacular, and we will do it at CERN in the OSCAR experiment, is the following. We have a laser, very powerful laser, and a magnetic cavity, and we have a laser, photons, that travel back and forth here. There is a small probability that one of the photons is converted into an axion. And there, after this, there is a wall, and there is another cavity, absolutely equal to the previous one, which is completely dark and tuned to the frequency of the laser. The detectors are tuned to the frequency. So if there is a conversion to an axion goes through the wall, of course, without any problem, there is equal probability that axion is reconverted into a photon. So that in the completely dark quantum optical cavity, there will be a light of exactly the same frequency as the laser, coming from the same direction, so we can discriminate between those and, for example, cosmic rays, photons coming from the cosmic rays. That is called shining through the wall experiment. And actually, at CERN, it is very convenient because at the test hall for magnets, there is a string of two magnets, a wall, and a string of two magnets. So it is ideally adapted to this. And fortunately, the length of the magnet at LHC is 15 meters. Because the magnets at LHC are curved, because the tunnel is curved, but still with 15 meters, you can still see through the aperture. If they were 17 meters long, we would not see at all through the magnet. But fortunately, 15 meters, we still see something going along the straight line. So that's the experiment that we are now performing. Of course, our sensitivity is much too low yet, but we will increase this. The other thing that is interesting with this experiment is that in quantum electrodynamics, there is a prediction that is, I don't know, 80 years old, that because of the production, there's an Euler-Heisenberg Lagrangian in quantum electrodynamics, and that gives effective rotation of polarization. So to see that this effect was never seen in the optical regime directly, we have, of course, many confirmations like lamp shift, for example, that it is there, but we have never seen light on light scattering. So that would be the first time that one would see that the magnetic field scatters light. So that would be there. The other thing is axion-gluon coupling. That is important to solve the strong CP problem, to say that this phase is actually the something that solves the strong CP problem. So that is the usual Lagrangian of the axion. As I said, this comes from anomaly in the usual approach. In our case, we had to calculate such a diagram so that the axion coupled to right chiral neutrinos only through the Majorana term, they have to be converted into left chiral neutrinos, and that costs m nu divided by mw. Then we have w's, then we have quarks, and then we have gluons. So that is three loop. That the lowest order is three loops. When we calculate this diagram, and we have done so in this paper, this diagram is completely finite. So there is no anomaly in it. You can calculate this, it is completely finite. And it turns out that because of this, that one has to convert right to left, that is always proportional to the mass of the particle, this thing has m nu divided by mw squared. So this Fa, that is customary to write it this way, this Fa is naturally extremely large in this model because neutrinos are so light. So we don't, usually people introduce very large scale to this Majorana type coupling. Here we don't have it. We don't have to introduce large scale. It comes out naturally that the axon is weakly coupled. So this is 10 to the 16. So this is far above, as I said. It is also interesting that in the usual models, axion-gluon-gluon is the primary interaction, while axion-photon-photon is smaller by alpha electromagnetic. Here, alpha electromagnetic, because it's two-loop, is larger than axion-gluon-gluon. So it's the other way around than the usual thing. So we don't know why neutrinos are so light, but since they are light, we have such a term. So this is extremely large in the denominator. The effective potential, since we have such a coupling, we know that the effective potential for axions starts to give it a mass, and the mass is roughly of the order of lambda QCD squared divided by FA, and it is of the order of 10 to the minus 8 electron volts, and it is a very good candidate for cold dark matter. So it is extremely light, and it is never in thermal equilibrium, this piece. It is produced by coherent oscillations in the potential of QCD. And it turns out that the mass of the order above 10 to the minus 9 electron volts can be a cold dark matter candidate. That is because at QCD, at the temperature equal to QCD, the radius, causally connected radius, was roughly 100 meters in the early universe. 100 meters corresponds to 10 to the minus 8 electron volts. So if delta P is smaller than M, they are cold, or at most warm. They cannot be smaller, but because even then they would be relativistic now. OK, that's the coupling that we have calculated. Sorry? That's the usual axiom, like, yes, we don't have any difference. There are difficulties there, but not connected to this model exactly. That one has to be in some specific part, because if it is larger than that, there is a feedback, because there is not enough energy to go much above the potential. So these coherent oscillations, to be closely equal to or approximately equal to the critical ones, if they are above something, there is a feedback on that. So it modifies the oscillation. So yes, if it is less close to critical, there is no problem. If it is above the if the energy in the oscillations is larger than the critical one, there is a feedback because there is not enough energy in the universe to convert this in essence. Yes, of course, of course. Not yet, no, no. Yes, and actually the bicep, for example, by the way, is giving such a huge value of R, is very difficult to justify in the usual inflation, while for the cosmic strings have naturally R close to 1, if you look at it. So I was calculating once in the pre-Big Bang cosmology with Gabriele Veneziano, the spectra in pre-Big Bang cosmology. So I was puzzled by the fact, sorry, so that's a digression, but maybe that's later on, let's discuss it. But these axioms have the potential much below. Yes, yes, but they start to have a potential at lambda QCD, that it's 100 MeV and not 100 GeV. Yeah. Yes. Okay, let's talk about this. Okay, okay. We'll discuss this. Okay. Okay, so the summary. This conformal standard model satisfies these conditions of softly broken conformal symmetry, and standard model doesn't. By very, very small amount, it doesn't, but it certainly doesn't. It solves the problem of standard model hierarchy. Solves, you know, we assume that it solves at some lambda scale, so it does not solve in the sense of the supersymmetry. But we think that supersymmetry is sort of an overkill because it gives the theory the function that is zero identically, while what we need is actually at one point. It's enough if this function has zero at one point. Strong CP and cold dark matter, that is subject to discussion, say, and can be viable up to the Planck scale. It has two more parameters than the standard model. I can recall that minimally supersymmetric standard model has 116 more parameters than the standard model, not including right chiral neutrinos. With right chiral neutrinos, it has even more. It has definite and unique predictions for LHC. There are two mass eigenstates, mixed Higgs and new scalar, heavy neutrinos between, I don't know, 300 and 1 TeV or 2 TeV. All cross sections and decay rates are calculable. And therefore, the theory is falsified by LHC if beta is not too small. So if the heavier is not too heavy, therefore, they are one-to-one. If it is very heavy, beta is too small, is small. So these two things go in one direction to make it very, very difficult to. But if a beta is of the order of 0.3 or 0.2, it is certainly falsifiable by LHC. And there is necessary part, light and naturally weakly coupled axion, that is a cold dark matter candidate. Thank you.
So, I mean, I would ask if there are questions. There's already been a lot of questions, but are there more questions?
So you mentioned how the theory is falsifiable as long as beta wasn't too small. What fixes
nothing.
Beta?
Nothing. No, that is a free parameter. So in a sense, that's the only parameter because it's almost uniquely gives the heavier mass of the heavier scalar, of the heavier eigenstate. So, but nothing. No, that's a free parameter. So we have additional parameter. This is M1, M2, lambda 2, lambda 3. Plus the vacuum expectation values, so they are connected. So when we use these two equations that are at the Planck scale, that the quadratic divergences vanish, we are left with two, but one, if we look on the scalar sector, it's only one, essentially beta, which is in a sense one-to-one correspondence with the heavier eigenstate scalar, is the only parameter. No, we don't. We have no. It's a free parameter, so it can be anything. So if beta is close to zero, there is no way to discover this. There is no way because neutrinos are also right chiral neutrinos are very heavy. They are anyway difficult to discover. But everything is pushed up when beta goes down.
So if I remember, I'm here.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly, in the first version of your paper 7 years ago, there was a prediction of the Higgs mass, which didn't turn out to be right.
Yes.
So what has changed in this new version?
Because we have added, because we have changed the interpretation of the softly broken, because then we have assumed that the Coleman-Weinberg mechanism is at work. But this Coleman-Weinberg, when we look now at this paper, is if we have Coleman-Weinberg, we have quadratic divergences in the model. So that's what has changed, because now we assume that there can be M1 and M2, but the crucial thing is lack of quadratic divergences. So in a sense, now when we look at it and we don't impose this, we must have the wrong prediction for the Higgs. So now with these two conditions that have replaced the Coleman-Weinberg in a sense, and we consider it much more fundamental, lack of quadratic divergences, so that over all scale, masses are small in comparison to lambda. So that has changed. The interpretation that these two conditions, we have added these two conditions, and we don't assume that Coleman-Weinberg is at work, because we think that the vanishing of quadratic divergences is much more fundamental than the fact that masses at some scale are zero.
No, I just wanted to ask whether, so you could embed your theory in a more conventional theory where I just introduce, so take standard renormalization and just add this add this other field. Add the right-handed neutrinos. Now you've got a bigger space of couplings.
Uh-huh.
Run it. Take the data we have. Run it. You know, consider which region of parameter space in this bigger theory is consistent with what we see, and then extrapolate this theory up to the Planck scale.
Yes.
And the theory you've discussed is kind of set of measure zero in that bigger theory.
Yes.
So what if one does that? Would you discover any evidence in favor of your idea that you should set the quadratic divergence as zero?
I would say that the fact that having only the standard model, so I don't introduce this phi, I don't introduce neutrinos, right chiral neutrinos,
no, I want to
lambda 2, lambda 3. When I run this one condition of the standard model, it is almost zero at the Planck scale.
No, I want to consider the bigger theory.
Yes.
With phi, with right-handed. What singles out, does your condition somehow better approximate
I would yes
reality,
I would say yes.
Give a more sensible picture than simply following the conservative the old-fashioned approach.
We have done this exercise, namely we have taken this and we have assumed that there is no Landau poles or instabilities in the whole system, lambda 1, lambda, with the bottom-top approach. So we assume something at the weak scale, and we go up. And we have seen that the range of parameters that is allowed here goes over, and we assume that lambda 1 is positive everywhere, so that there is no this problem with standard model that goes to negative lambda 1, so that the potential doesn't become unstable at any scale.
That's not obviously a problem. I mean, it's a, we live in a metastable minimum, but otherwise.
Yes, but I think from the point of view of particle physics, if you have lambda minus lambda 1 phi to the fourth at some point, mm-hmm. it is a problem if you wait long enough.
No, it just means we're metastable. It doesn't.
Yes, but you know why we are not in the other vacuum? Why we do not? Because there is nothing to stop it in this model.
Because you.
I don't have any order of dimension five things that can correct this.
But in the standard model, there's nothing. In the standard model, the true minimum of the potential.
Yes, but
is
we
negative.
Know where is the minimum because we, yeah, there is lambda phi to the four that corrects this. Here there is nothing. So no, if we run and run and run and we have lambda 1 negative at some point, that's a problem for the particle physics.
In the standard model, it does turn up again around the
yes,
Planck
mass.
Yes,
but you have to add higher dimension operators.
No, in the minimal standard model, it turns up again.
Yes,
but
it is negative at some point. Yes, it goes up again above at 10 to the 24,
okay.
Exactly.
All right, okay. I'm not
okay,
sure.
Okay, for me, it would be a problem, sorry.
Okay, fine.
Okay, so if we run and we... require that everything is positive, small, alone. We end up in something that is very close to zero for both conditions.
I see. So in other words, your conditions aren't that essential. They don't seem
no,
to be that
because,
essential.
No, they are not essential because for us, we define a theory at lambda, not at the electroweak scale. At lambda, we have to define a theory and we assume that the theory that descended from this, so with all gravitational, whatever degrees of freedom, we integrate them over, whatever, and we are left over with our degrees of freedom. And we assume that this theory is kind enough for us to make m squared small, and there are no quadratic divergences. There is zero at some point. Mm. Whatever this scale is, if it goes somewhere, if we knew lambda 2, lambda 3, and neutrino, we would say what the scale is by running from the bottom to the top. We would say, aha, it is zero at 2 times 10 to the 18 GeV. That's the scale that we define our theory. If it is 2 times 10 to the 19, that would be the scale. But it is certainly very close to the Planck scale with these conditions, going bottom up and not top bottom. So we are very close to zero for both conditions. If we assume that we have a running to the Planck's up to the 10 to the 19, and we do not encounter any problems. We are very close to zero. That's why we say, okay, maybe this condition of conformance. You know, we have written a paper with Hermann Nicolai, because there was always, people said, okay, but gravity is not conformal invariant. There is a Newton's constant, which is certainly not conformal invariant. So we have made an exercise. Hermann Nicolai is very good at supergravity, as we all know. So we have made an exercise, n equals 4 gauged supergravity. And we started to go to lower energies, in a sense, to start to decouple the Young-Mills part from the gravity part. And it turned out that what was left over was super Young-Mills, n equals 4, plus gravity. So something that is even an overkill, because n equals 4 super Young-Mills doesn't have an anomaly. It's fully conformal invariant. So it is not something that we would like to have. But anyway, it has shown the division into conformally non-invariant gravity plus fully conformally invariant Young-Mills, super Young-Mills. So there is an example that starting from conformally non-invariant theory, we are left over with particle part, which is conformally invariant, and gravity part, which is conformally non-invariant.
But maybe this was just a consequence of the supersymmetry?
Maybe. You know, we couldn't find an example, because we would like to have something that has anomaly, that has conformal, because then we would see the role of conformal anomaly in this full supergravity. But we have not found such an example. But it is, in principle, possible.
Any other questions?
If I can take issues with one of the statements about definite predictions. I don't think no, actually.
Which one?
On the last slide you say definite predictions for the LHC. I don't think you have any definite prediction, because there is nothing in this theory that fixed the scalar mass. You know, from all the assumptions that you made, the scalar could be 10 TeV, could be 100 TeV. It would make no difference for the theory, because there's nothing that fixes it. You'll never see it anywhere.
Definite, I don't mean that I can say that the mass is 600 GeV, for example. But if
no, but you cannot even say anything close to that, right? Like there is no predictive power to this theory.
There is a huge predictive power, because if such a scalar is discovered, we can say all the channels we can predict all the decay channels, all the decay rates, branching ratios, everything. So that is, you know, we have a lot of channels to decay, and each one of them has to be consistent with the theory. So we don't know the mass, but with the Higgs, for example, we didn't know the mass of the Higgs, but once it was known, we have all the channels calculated, and we can check it one by one, whether into two gammas is consistent, whether into four mu's is consistent, and so on and so forth. So here it is the same. We don't have the mass. But otherwise, it's not that we can have the screwdriver and change the branching ratio of going into four muons. We cannot. Once the mass is known, we know all the decay rates.
The mass of that particle is way too heavy that we will never produce it, and it will always decay to right-handed neutrinos, in which case you'll never even see it.
Yes, but the same you would say so before this 2000.
Is not, so there is no test that you can do to this theory that you can completely exclude it.
In the same way, you can say that standard model before the discovery of the Higgs was not predicted.
No, that's not true, because in the standard model, once you go above a TeV and you don't see a Higgs, unitarity starts to break down.
Yes, but you know, the fact that we get
so there is a very strong prediction in the standard model, and it's excluded.
The fact that Higgs would not be perturbative does not mean that it does not exist. That was our theoretical problem, to say that it should be below 1 TeV, and not the problem of a theory, sorry. So it was not predictive in the same sense. So maybe it will not be discovered. Yes, I agree. But maybe the Higgs could have 3 TeV, and we would still wait for it. Yeah. I don't agree with that. So it is fully predictive. Once it is known, everything, every channel has to have predictive and calculable branching ratio of the decay of this new mass eigenstate.
And if there's a 100 TeV accelerator and they do not see a new scalar, or they do not see right-handed neutrinos, is this dead?
No. 100 TeV makes sine of beta extremely small, since the cross-section goes down.
So no,
even 1 TeV, I think, would be questionable whether we can describe. Because it's not only that the cross-section goes down. The width of the resonance goes down like sine squared of beta, roughly, more or less.
So if these things are not seen, this model...
At LHC and 2021, for example, I would say that, you know, I'm sorry, maybe this is correct, but the second eigenstate is too heavy.
I see.
But if it is seen, then we can really check all the properties, whether it is zero. First of all, whether...
No, sure. But I'm just asking, how can you falsify this model?
If it is not seen, I cannot. If it is seen, I can... because there are many, many channels, and all of them should be consistent with the calculations. In that way, I can falsify the model.
Any other questions? Okay, then let's thank Christoph again.